We will begin with questions. Anyone who has a question can ask it now.
I don't know whether this is a question. I'm not quite sure. Whether it's a question or a comment. In the Great Freedom Teaching, you talk about letting go of descriptions, stop describing. Yet, when we're together, descriptions are nonstop. With the writing, you know, the written teaching and the verbal teaching. Can you talk about that?
I'll take all the questions in the beginning and then answer them during the talk. Did you listen to the talk from last week again?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And you, Eric?
Yes. Oh,
very good. Yes. Excellent. Wow.
Well, it keeps coming up for me, and we've talked about it, and that's just where the relationship with guru comes in, the function of the guru. It just keeps coming up for me, and things are just getting dislodged, you know, points of view are getting dislodged, and so everything across the board gets dislodged, which is a good thing, and I feel the freedom of that. And how it all works together for me is still kind of comes up as a question. And yet great freedom is something that's just opening up for me in such a beautiful way that, you know, I just have to follow for me.
Could you speak about anecdotes in our life when things may come up? We may go ahead and write out of the teachings or listen to one of the talks and things like that. And then at the same time, could you speak to using that as an anecdote? You know, knowing when... I don't want to say the difference, but being aware of that one is resting and not using something else to replace what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
If that's clear.
Sure, I'll start with that. An antidote is a countermeasure to what's occurring right here. And when we look at all the countermeasures we use to try to fix our points of view so that they can be something else or so that we can avoid them, they're multitudinous, they're endless, they're ceaseless. When we're always looking for a countermeasure to what we're feeling or thinking or experiencing or sensing, then we're never present. We're really never present as we are. And so for most of us, we have never heard, until we come to the Great Freedom Teaching, a perfectly clear, concise description of reality. We've never heard it spoken. We've never seen it written down. We may see things that kind of refer to it or where we get a very strong hit of it. But there's never anything that by hearing it or reading it, just by simply that alone, hearing or reading that, will open up more and more of the space of the nature of reality itself. And so we can know that when we hear or read something like that, we've encountered something very special. And rather than it being a countermeasure to what's occurring, it clarifies what's occurring. So you see, this is the difference between an antidote and a clarification of the true nature of points of view. So this is very, very important. That's why the four comforts are suggested in the Great Freedom Teaching, to rely on the practice of resting as awareness, to rely on the teacher, to rely on the written teaching and the verbal teachings as well, and to rely on the community that is committed to resting as awareness. And so know that when you use any of the four comforts, rather than being a countermeasure to what's occurring, it's a clarification of what's occurring. And these two are very distinct. Now, in the Great Freedom Teaching, we talk about resting as awareness without seeking or describing anything. So what does that mean? It means, first of all, that we identify with awareness rather than with points of view. So our whole strategy for living life has been to identify with points of view rather than awareness. So all we do is identify with awareness. The points of view, the anecdotes, the anecdotal points of view we've been using, all of these will disappear and resolve in their own right simply by identification with awareness. So we don't really have to do anything about the points of view. We don't need to look into them, explore them, analyze them, try to get rid of them, try to hold on to them. We don't have to do any of that. So this is very important. Identification with awareness is the sole resort, the sole refuge, the sole resource. Now, when we've been fighting against points of view all of our lives, this really turns the apple cart upside down, because now we're only identifying with awareness. That's what we're doing. Awareness, which is equal to the nature of reality, whatever you call it. It's equal to reality itself. It's equal to the expanse of reality itself. It's whatever you may have called it, it's equal to conscious, loveless light. It's equal to the guru, whoever that guru is that you might adore. It's equal to yourself. You see, so whatever you might describe, it is equal to that. Yet nothing encapsulates it. So that, you see, there's never any point of view that's made into something that could encapsulate reality itself. Yet every single point of view is reality itself. There's no point of view that ever captures that reality, no matter how exalted or mundane the point of view might be. All points of view are absolutely equal. Now, when we identify with awareness, it greatly expands our ability to love. And so where we might have focused our attention on a few love objects or loved people, and whereas we may have had attachments to certain people, places, and things, by the power of identifying with awareness, we no longer have attachment to any point of view, no matter what it is. Now, if we have been involved in a practice like guru devotion, where we've been focusing our energy and attention and devotion to one particular person, or on one particular person, then this is what they are. When we rest as awareness, we rest as that devotional aspect. And so, you know, it may be that if we've been involved in guru devotion, all our ideas about what that has been up until this point might shift dramatically. And that just has to be okay. Because all that's going on is a dramatic increase in your ability to love and a dramatic increase in your confidence in the nature of reality. So as that shakes loose, that just has to be okay. There isn't any way that it won't work out well. Do you see what I'm saying? There's just no way that it can't work out well. So this is very good. Now you've been involved in an intensive practice of guru devotion for 26 years. And so it's looked one way for all that time. But now you're opening up more into the depths of what that really means, what that's really about. The outshining of all points of view, or the outshining of all points of light within an integrated architecture or mandala of light. The true nature of reality itself is that if we reduce what we see to its simplest form, what we have is an integrated architecture of brilliant light, not colored light, but just brilliant light, very, very bright light. And this integrated architecture or mandala is endlessly dimensional. There would be no way to describe all the dimensions that it involves, but that's still a point of view. You see, awareness is required to be aware of a description even as exalted as that, as magnificent as that. And so we want to go right to the source. Awareness or consciousness and reality itself are equal. Reality itself, nature's intelligence, is aware. It is conscious. And so when we identify with awareness, that by which reality itself is aware of itself, then we identify with the very basis of everything, no matter what we call that. If we call it the absolute reality itself, Dharmakaya, whatever we call it, we're talking about exactly the same thing. Today, we as a global human family share a unique opportunity, and that is a common understanding and common language that we can use to talk about these things, so that we're no longer divided into this sect and that sect, or this group and that group. We're all one community. We all have a common understanding. And this is what very much what great freedom is about. It gives people a basis, a community that they can rely on all of their life. That no one here can ever say go away or come over here. We don't say either one. It's up to you to decide whether you're actively participating or not. So you see, this is a very rare commodity, so to speak. We can go lots of people. We've formed lots of organizations as human beings, but most of these organizations, when we join up, what is implicit in joining up is that we can be asked to leave. So we live our entire life within the organization, at least somewhat afraid that we will be asked to leave. And so to have an organization where no one can ask us to leave, that gives us a great deal of freedom to really explore the nature of our own being. Mm-hmm. So you see, we've all been involved in many different practices, spiritual practices, psychological practices, practices related towards science in terms of our cosmology, the way we see the nature of reality. For example, evolutionism is a way many people today see the nature of reality. And so, you know, whatever those may be, we really don't have to worry about all their descriptions. We don't talk about letting go of descriptions and great freedom, we talk of letting them be as they are. just letting them be as they are. They are non-limiting. Descriptions as they are reality itself, they are limitless. They are non-limiting and non-restrictive. A description cannot limit reality itself, and it cannot restrict it in any way. It's impossible. So the power and significance that we've given points of view is a power and significance they do not have. We've duped ourselves if we believe that these descriptions have a power to affect anything. And and most of all, if we say that we have formed some kind of a fixed identity of some kind, that we have actually formed a thing that has a power, like an ego or a personality or some other label we use to say that we have this identity and somehow there's something wrong with it. It needs to be gotten rid of or purified or changed into another identity. If we have that as our starting point, then it'll be impossible to gain confidence and awareness. Because no matter how good we get at reshaping our identity, it will never be good enough to match up to conscious loveless light or to Dharmakaya, or we're always going to see this identity as inferior to the great exaltation body of whatever it is that we're describing as some kind of absolute. The absolute is right here. When we identify with awareness for a short moment, we identify ourselves as Dharmakaya, as conscious loveless light, as reality itself, as awareness. That's what we call it in the Great Freedom Teaching. Awareness, the superstructure of everything, depending upon our cultural bent or our descriptive frameworks, we might call it something else. But it's just very easy to say awareness. In awareness, all else will reveal itself. You'll come to see that all descriptions you've had of reality, no matter what they may be, are rooted in awareness. That awareness is pervasive of every description of reality, or any kind of filmic image, graphical image of any kind that can come to mind, any imagination or expression. Awareness is pervasive of that. And so, why settle for the description? There's no way to lose with gaining confidence and awareness. No way to lose whatsoever. No matter how long you live, no matter what you come up against, even if you are able to rest without trying to do so, like a number of people in this room are, we never can be certain about what's going to happen next. We can never be certain. And so with this practice, we can know that whatever we face, we're going to be all right. Everything that we know and feel comfortable about and rely on for security, it could all fall apart. But with awareness, we have no fear. With confidence and certainty and awareness, we have no fear any longer. We know that we can face anything, including fear, and be free of that. And so you see, when I say we no longer have any fear, we no longer have any fear of any description, including fear. That's true fearlessness. It doesn't mean we enter into some apathetic state, like that we're stoned on pot or something. That isn't what it is at all. It makes us capable of true relationship, of true relationality, of true intimacy, of true love. And so all this we find in a single moment of awareness. You see, it's there, full-fledged. It's not a destination to get to. full-fledged reality itself is in that moment of awareness. And by identifying with that awareness over and over again, moment by moment, there's just more and more of that awareness present in all points of view. Points of view aren't something other than awareness. When a point of view arises, awareness arises simultaneously. They're completely inseparable. Everything that is perceived by the awareness that pervades everything. Everything is inseparable from that awareness itself. A vast expanse in which nothing can be separated out. And so just as the air is inseparable from space, so too points of view are inseparable from awareness. When we've been involved in a lifelong project that sees life as hard work, then to make it so easy on ourselves can be kind of jarring at first. We may even say to ourselves, oh, it couldn't be this easy. Something this good could not be this easy. Well, why not? Why not? Everything that is already is as it is. Reality itself is present as everything. Consciousness is present as everything. Awareness is present as everything. So it has to be easy. It has to be easy. It's this idea that it's difficult that is one of the biggest points of view. That we are so lowly and unworthy and we must sacrifice and work and throw ourselves on the ground and flail and do all kinds of things that we don't really want to do, and like meditate for endless hours or the other things that are so difficult to do. The ultimate meditation is the meditation that pervades all of life. That's the ultimate meditation. The ultimate meditation isn't sitting for hours and getting into some kind of blissed out state. The ultimate meditation is the meditation that pervades all of waking reality, all of sleeping reality, all of dreaming reality. All of these points of view are pervaded by awareness. And so the most likely way that it's going to be pervasive of waking, dreaming, and sleeping is when we capture the throne of awareness for short moments, repeated many times. In this way, in a natural, uncontrived way that pervades all types of points of view, we come to see the basis of these points of view. And thus these points of view, these points of light, are outshone by the light of awareness. And that comes about by identifying with the light of awareness. It's due to the light of awareness that any point of view is obvious. Without the light of awareness, it would never be obvious. We'd never know anything about it. It wouldn't be, including the point of view of ourselves. So if we want to figure ourselves out and get rid of some habitual patterns we have and that sort of thing, the greatest kind of self-understanding we can possibly come to is in self-awareness. With that, we'll come to understand everything about our habitual patterns of points of view, no matter what they are. And so, otherwise, we'll just neutralize them if we try to change them or make ourselves into someone who isn't having contractions of points of view or whatever we call it. Then we'll just be caught up in that whole way of looking at things, that there is something that could contract. Show me where in the sky there is anything that can contract. There isn't anything in flawless sky that can contract. There is nothing in reality itself that ever contracts. That's just a point of view. So if you have a point of view about yourself being a living contraction or a fixation or identification or whatever you call it, when this point of view comes up, rest. Do not get into seeing yourself in that way. No matter what you call it, it's already free in its own place. No matter what you call it, it's never had an independent origin or nature. So how could it be anything? It's impossible that it could be anything, because there's never been anything that's independent of all of this. You see, that's what it means that there is no independent nature. It's the same thing as impermanence. What is impermanence? Well, impermanence is really abstract. How can we ever understand that everything is impermanent and fleeting? We can come to understand that by taking short moments of awareness and knowing that no matter what appears, it does not have an independent nature. It means that there's nothing that independently originates in and of itself. Thus, nothing that is described is limiting in any way, because it does not have an independent nature. It has no independent power of identity. It has no independent substantiality that can give it a power or force to do anything. So all these concepts, no matter how intellectually brilliant they are, they don't have an independent nature. They have no power to either inform you or disinform you. Short moments, many times, its power cannot be overstated. It's extremely powerful. Now, how was your week? I've asked couple of the others.
My week was good.
It was.
I listened to some of your downloads.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some questions.
Sure.
I once had a sudden spontaneous experience where I was everything and everything was me. Everything perfect, exactly as it is. Along with that was an incredible emotional release. I was 19 years old when that happened, and I did not know what to do with that. So I won't go into a long story of how I got here, but since then I've had other experiences, only one under controlled conditions, but none of them were like that first one. And I know what you're talking about. Everything comes out of the one. And myself included. But how to get back there is why I'm here. I've tried a lot of different ways, and some of them worked. One worked very well, a lot of hard work to make it happen. But since then, I've had a lot of other little spontaneous flashes here and there, and I would like to make it more permanent.
You're in the right place.
Now, the other question I have is, I've kind of realized that sometimes I'm there and don't know I'm there.
Yeah.
And until after it passes. Sounds strange to say that. But when you say, the question is, what do I do with my attention, in your terms, to rest and awareness?
Attention and awareness are synonymous.
For the focus of my attention.
Mm-hmm. Rest as awareness. It's awareness resting as itself in its natural state. The underlying basis, foundation, structure, and support for all points of view that appear within it. Whether it's a point of view of not getting it or a point of view of I've got it. You see, they're both equal. and awareness. They're both absolutely equal. So when you say, sometimes I had it and I didn't know I had it until later, that would be all the time. But by this simple practice of short moments many times, what you're doing is you're touching in to the nature of yourself briefly. Now, when you were 19, you had an experience where you had an instinctive realization of what that is. So that's good, because you know what awareness is. You know what that instinctive realization is. So it's that instinctive realization that you're resting as, whatever you want to call it. We call it awareness because we want to facilitate a common language among humankind. But you can call it whatever you want. You rest as that instinctive realization no matter what appears. You identify with that rather than identifying with the points of view. Only two ways to go: identifying with that instinctive realization or identifying with points of view. You don't have to do anything about the points of view. When you identify with the instinctive realization, whether you get it or you don't get it, it doesn't matter.
Just identify with it.
Identify with the instinctive realization. All these other descriptions about you and what's going on with you, or other people, what's going on with them, all of it appears equally within that instinctive realization.
It seems to me like I'm working around then with a memory rather than actually experiencing it right now.
Uh-huh. Well, this is why we talk about awareness. Awareness is pervasive of the here and now. Awareness is pervasive of the pure presence of the self-releasing here and now. That's all that's occurring. That's all that's ever occurring. And so if you call it a memory, or you call it a future tripping, or whatever you call it, it's the spontaneous self-release of the here and now. And awareness pervades all of that. So don't get caught up in all these traps of describing this or that. An instinctive realization is beyond thought and reason. In other words, it doesn't need thought and reason to support it. That's why it's called an instinctive realization.
In trying to practice, what I do is just stop all thought. Don't let any thought in. Is that close to what you were talking about? And just experience the nothingness there.
A non-conceptual state. Yes. That is a good approach, but now we're going to take it a little further. If you stop your thought and you don't have any thoughts, what you have is a non-conceptual point of view. So you see, it's still a point of view. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is very significant. Okay, when you stop thinking, you enter into either a point of view called a non-conceptual point of view, or you rest as awareness while a conceptual point of view appears within that non-conceptual awareness. So that's the key: to not try to stop the thoughts from coming, to allow non-conceptuality to be the case, and then see how that's inseparable from conceptuality. That's what non-duality is, folks. The two aren't separate. There is no two. There is no non-conceptual and conceptual. There is no two.
So then stopping thoughts will not permit me to see beyond the non-stopping of the thought, or to experience beyond the non-stopping of the thought into the true full realization.
Inseparability, exactly. And this is a mistake that is often made in meditation. People attempt to prolong a non-conceptual state But it, all that is just a point of view. It's an anomaly of point of view. It may be a much better point of view than anything that's happened before. Certainly when you have rampaging herds of points of view running through your mind, a non-conceptual state can feel really great after that. Mm-hmm. But it's still a point of view. So you understand it correctly. When the thoughts are stopped, then notice how a point of view appears, the next conceptual point of view appears within that open spaciousness. And then notice how it resolves into it. And then notice that the next one comes, and then it resolves. And this way, you're identifying with awareness rather than what's appearing within awareness. This is very simple.
But there's something underneath the non-conceptual, and sometimes if I just stay there, it's like the bottom falls out.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then there's just pure stillness, pure silence.
Mm-hmm.
But even that's not.
That's still a point of view. You see, we don't need to call what we are anything. We really don't. The moment we take up a descriptive framework of any kind, silence, stillness, guru, whatever it is, then we have something we want to hold on to. We have another point of view that becomes the way we see life. So there's no need to try to have a descriptive framework of any kind. Just know that by relying on awareness, more and more you'll understand the nature of reality. And all of your best love descriptions of reality will be verified and gone beyond. So it's okay. You know, it's just like any of the... Well, perhaps the greatest guru devotion lineage of all times is Tibetan Buddhism. Certainly it has the longest history of guru devotion, and it is a type of guru devotion where the actual result of enlightenment has occurred for millions of people. Millions of Tibetans and other people scattered around the globe now too. So at one time in that culture, the practice, which is resting as awareness and relying on the guru to give you the key instructions you need to do that, that's what their practice of guru devotion is. And so the idea there is to realize that what the guru is, in other words, what they've instinctively realized in their own life, is your instinctive realization. That's what guru devotion is. And so you see, you have to really understand what it is in order to not be afraid of it or overly compelled by it. Awareness is the space in which the guru and the disciple or the devotee both appear equally. You see, this is the purpose of guru devotion. So if you want to worship somebody, understand what's going on. And any real guru, any guru who is a true guru, will support that process fully. You know, there's nothing to be afraid of. It's like an ultimate friendship. It's an ultimate friendship. That's what it is. It's if you are born into human life and you want to find the ultimate friend, someone who can really help you through life, this is the person you want to find. And you want to find two other people that they've influenced who can support you as well, the community. And there's nothing more we could really want out of life than this. And so you see, by identifying with awareness, even though it may sound overly simple or simplistic, and to some people it does at first, know that this is the practice that has led to the result for more people than any other practice ever known among humankind. And so why not? Why not hook up to that star, huh? You know, it's just we as human beings, we're pack animals. We're very simple. You know, we like to be together. We like to kind of move around in our herd and our pack. And so, you know, we're always looking for other people who know how to do it, who, you know, kind of have a handle on life, so that we can learn from them about knowing how to do it. And so it's a very simple proposition. When we discover people who do know how to live life with the aliveness of this instinctive realization, then we want to hang out with them. It's just very, very simple. You know, if we don't have mental and emotional stability and we meet people that do have mental and emotional stability, then we want to know how they did that. Or if we see that they have keen insights about everything that allow them to manifest all kinds of incredible things in life, well, they can teach us a thing or two. It's very simple. Compassion the same way. If we meet people who are compassionate and just, you know, purely compassionate, no matter how you act, they're still compassionate. It can be wrathful, but it's with love. Wrathful compassion is just love and compassion in a wrathful form. It always leads to a beneficial result. That's how we can tell whether it's really compassion or not. If we see people who really are unrelentingly compassionate, then we want to learn from them. You know, maybe we can be that way ourselves. When we see someone like that, we know we can be that way ourselves because they're a human being just like us. This is what we have to learn. And then if we see people who are highly skilled and can do all kinds of things because they have the release of tremendous energy that goes along with not being all wrapped up in points of view, then, you know, that's something incredible. These are the people we want to have in our lives. We don't want to be overly involved with people who are wrapped up in points of view. We can develop a deep and compassionate understanding of them, but we might find that we no longer need to be wrapped up with them. We can be if we want to. It's not going to hamper our instinctive realization because nothing can. So, you know, no matter who we are living life, we're going to run up against some people who are all wrapped up in their points of view, or maybe a lot. But if we're relying on the instinctive realization of awareness and identifying with that, then it doesn't matter what other people are doing. It doesn't matter what physical location we're in. And it doesn't matter what kinds of things we're dealing with in life. Or just like you and your job, this is something anyone you work with can do. You know, this is something people can get. It doesn't need to be forced into any kind of category or context like spirituality or religion. It's deeply human. It's deeply natural. It's the very heartbeat of existence. Awareness is the very heartbeat of existence. So if we identify with that, then we see more and more of these profound qualities appearing in our life from the very first moment. If you have lots of questions and doubts, so what? Identify with awareness. Entertaining the questions and doubts, it's just going to lead to a tornado of points of view. Doubts come up. The brilliant equalness of awareness. Fantastic realizations come up. The brilliant equalness of awareness. Horrible experiences come up. The brilliant equalness of awareness. So don't, even with seductive experiences, don't get taken off course. These are just another part of the wondrous display. They're nothing to cling to. Did you have any other questions you'd like to ask?
So I'm not clear on one point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an engineer, so I see what you have developed as a method, as a system.
Yeah.
You have a tool or a group of tools which most teachers don't have at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I find attractive about this. And so my question is still is, the what is general, and I wonder if you could be more specific. And as an example, I can cut off my thoughts, I can just kind of fall back into nothingness, and there's just nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you are talking about?
When
you say rest and awareness for brief periods of time, just continue doing that for brief periods of time.
Don't call it nothingness or anything. Just,
there's no word for it. Really.
Exactly. But please don't call it nothingness. Please. You see, you have been a practicing Buddhist, a serious practicing Buddhist. And so what is Buddhism? It is called the middle way. And what does the middle way mean? The middle way does not refer to a neutral space in between two things. That's not what the middle way means. The middle way means no adoption of extremes, no clinging to any of the dharmas, no clinging to any phenomenon that appears, no matter what it is, not buying into nothingness, not buying into somethingness. That's the middle way. Free of extremes. And so, whatever you, better to just instinctively, intuitively rest as that which has no description.
Okay, that's good. That works for me.
And more and more, you'll realize that what you realized when you were 19, that everything is indivisible and inseparable. But you see, this realization comes about on the ground running. On the ground running. So that there's no way to stop the unpredictability and the ceaselessness of phenomenal appearances, no matter what they are. But in this way, you identify as the ground of all that, rather than the phenomenal appearances. You're absolutely correct that this is a system and it is a method. It is a method and a system that are methodless and systemless. And so this is what you realize more and more. Identify with awareness. Identify as awareness. Identify with that true power of what you are, rather than giving away your power to descriptions. And within that, the resolution of everything will occur. The resolution of being somebody and the resolution of being nobody. You see, this is where most of us fall into a trap. We identify with being somebody or we identify with being nobody. Well, either way, we're in a trap. In awareness, we're free of all descriptive extremes, all points of view, no matter what they are. So you know what this is, now just identify. Rest as awareness, again and again, until it becomes automatic.